Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome back to the Daily Jungle. We had a fun show today, and by fun, I mean weird. Really, really weird. And not because of me either. My game was tight. My takes were stacked for days. But then you clones took it over and ripped it from me. You know, I had a pretty solid take. As an example, I had a solid take on Tom Savage losing the starting quarterback job for the Texans after only 31 snaps. My take on the Olympics coming back to LA was fire. But all you people did was drag me down over and over and over again. And what do I do for you? I give you three great guests. Hall of Famer Terrell Davis, driver of the number 21 car, Ryan Blaney, Maryland football coach DJ Durkin. And all you want to do was talk about Hawks hacked Twitter feed and Aaron from Corvallis. A ton of show, and some of it was even good. Alvy, go ahead and get this thing rolling. Let's start with Thursday Night Football. Texans and Bengals kick off tonight. It's in the Natty. And while Bill O'Brien has played things pretty close to the vest, Adam Schefter is reporting that Deshaun Watson, as expected, is going to get that start. So apparently the Tom Savage era is over already. And I could say one guy was not very happy about that. Tom freaking Savage. Because dude only got 31 snaps. He only threw 13 passes, completing 7, with a couple of drops in there too. And of course, he had to play behind a line that nearly got him killed by my man Calais Campbell. Because Savage thinks that he didn't do anything to lose that job. Hell, if you listen to his agent, he'll tell you Savage didn't even play that badly. Neil Schwartz told Pro Football Talk, quote, "I watched all 31 plays, and I can't figure out why he's benching Tom. I went through every single play. I even went one step further. I asked two different NFL personnel people, or coaches, on two separate teams to evaluate and break down the film to see if I was missing something," end quote. Well, Neil, if you would ask me, I would tell you this. You are missing one thing. Here's what you're missing. He's Tom Savage. This is the NFL. This is the Houston Texans. They're now rolling out their 9th different starting quarterback since O'Brien arrived. Let me lay out this murderer's row for you. Ryan Fitzpatrick, Case Keenum, Brian Hoyer, Ryan Mallett, TJ Yates, Brandon Whedon, Brock Osweiler, Savage, and now Watson. One of those guys is not like the others. The guy the Texans traded 2 first-rounders for and shipped out a 2nd-rounder just to clear the decks of Brock Lobster. The fact that O'Brien still even has a job with that list of arsonists, the fact that he's managed to win 9 games a year since taking over, they had to go ahead and start building the 20-foot bronze statue for that coach right now. But going back to Savage's agent, since Sunday he's broken down the game tape, handed out grades, and gotten 2 different NFL personnel people to tell him that they thought that Tom did a nice job. I'd march that right into O'Brien's office. I'd walk right in there and give him the data. And I'm sure the coach will be like, "Damn, Neil, thank you for alerting me to this. After some consideration, I've got to say, you have changed my mind completely. Deshaun, get that helmet off your head. We're getting Savage tonight, fellas. We're getting Savage." Yeah, you're disappointed. You're disappointed and your client's disappointed. How badly do you think I wanted a quarterback named Savage to be playing in the NFL? It's one of the best names ever for a quarterback. And certainly one of the most ironic. Because the only thing that's Savage in this entire situation is O'Brien breaking Savage off after 31 plays. Now that's Savage. Especially since he's a free agent after this season, and he's not going to get another chance to see the field unless Deshaun gets hurt. But Bill O'Brien's a good coach. A good coach who I would love to give the benefit of the doubt to. And listen, you got to think this guy's probably not dying to put his rookie quarterback in week 2. After spending his entire offseason and training camp telling people that Savage was his starter. But it's not like this is Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre in the same quarterback room. It's Tom Savage and a guy the Texans traded the farm away for. So while O'Brien may be known for going to the hook early, the writing was always on the wall. This was going to happen. Buck up, Tommy. Wear that headset like an absolute savage tonight. Terrell Davis is my guest. Terrell, it's good to have you on the show. How are you?
Jim, Doing well, man. How you doing?
TD, it's been a long time. It's great to have you on the program. I am doing awesome. You know, I just mentioned it right off the top. It's been a few weeks since your induction into Canton. Let me start right there. How does it feel to be introduced as a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I like the way you brought me in. I was going to tell you, just, you know, keep going. Don't stop, man.
You got it. You got it.
That was nice. You know what? It feels great to have those sometimes those three letters in the front of when they introduce you to a crowd or to come out. It's more than that. It's not only for me. It's for the people who have helped me get to this point, my teammates, my coaches, family, friends. So, you know, they're just as a part of this whole process as I am. And I'm just honored to be able to have this gold jacket and the opportunity to be a Hall of Famer.
It's Terrell Davis joining us. LaDainian Tomlinson has a story about how the two of you were talking before the class of 2017 was first announced, and that you were saying to him that he was going to get in, but you were going to have to wait a little bit longer. What was it like then when you received the news that you were a part of that class?
Oh, it was incredible. Yeah, because I told LT, I mean, I knew he was going in, and I'd heard some, you know, kind of watching people and some of the experts say that, hey, you know, maybe they won't put two running backs in the same class. So I knew he was going in. I figured if LT was going in, that I may, you know, have to wait. But obviously, when I got that knock on the door from David Baker, man, everything just, you know, it was an overwhelming feeling that just sort of taken over, man. Just a sigh of relief, joy, you know, everything just kind of hits you at once. And, you know, at the end of the day, you sit there and you kind of sit there in disbelief, like, man, it's actually happening. But, you know, it was a moment that I would always cherish. My family was there. My agent was there. All my friends were there. So it was just a special time in my life.
Dave Baker is the Hall of Fame president. So when he knocks on that door, it's generally for very, very good news. You know, Terrell, we've talked about this. A lot of people have talked about your story and your journey and how amazing it is. And obviously, where you get drafted does not really mean anything at all. But could you ever imagine a football career that included a stop at Long Beach State and being the 196th pick in the draft would also include a stop in Canton and that yellow blazer?
Of course not. You know, I didn't think about that when I was at Long Beach. I certainly didn't think about that when I was at Georgia. And, you know, the times I was playing in Denver, I didn't think about the Hall. I just, you know, was kind of playing just to try to be the best player I could be. But, you know, I think that's what makes the story remarkable, and that hopefully it inspires young people that if they find themselves in a situation right now where they don't feel like they're having success or that things aren't going the way they want them to go, just keep pushing forward. And you never know what your future holds. So, you know, hopefully that story resonates with people and they can look at it, that my story as a source of inspiration.
You know, one more part about that, but when you're up there and you're delivering that speech, what's that moment like? I mean, does the enormity of the whole thing finally sink in right then and there, or does that happen later?
No, it happens there. You walk out there, you know exactly why you're there, and all the players tell you that you think you know what it feels like to walk out on that stage. They said, but trust me, it's going to be 10 times magnified, more than you thought it would be. And it's a little frightening walking out there knowing, you know, thousands, maybe millions of people are watching you speak. But then after a while, you sort of settle down. You realize it's a time to celebrate, not a time to be afraid. And then you just deliver the speech and hope that it has an impact on somebody.
So when that moment finally sets in and the enormity sets in, that's what that feels like. What's it like compared to, for instance, the moment that finally sets in when you're a world champion? You're a two-time Super Bowl champion. I get they're different, but how does that moment compare to the moment we just talked about?
Yeah, it's a little different, Jim. I think part of it is because, you know, you play a game, you know, you play a season, you play the playoffs, and then you play the championship game, and you win it, and it's like instant gratification. Well, the Hall of Fame comes, you know, it was 16 years after I was retired. And now you have this enormous honor, and you're being put in front of the entire football world. And so that's different. It's a little unique in that aspect, and that's why it's hard to explain to people what it feels like, because it's like no other experience you've ever had. And that's why people say, man, it is the best, you know, feeling in the world. They're a little different, you know, but they're both sweet. The Hall of Fame, I think, is probably – from an individual standpoint, obviously, is the best feeling you're going to get.
Terrell Davis joining us. He's appearing courtesy of Vizio's Big Screens for Big Plays campaign. I'm going to hit that in 1 minute. Also a member of the Hall of Fame. All right, so Terrell, what about a little football before I let you go and we talk about your plug as well? Le'Veon Bell missed all of training camp. He goes out. He has just 47 yards on 13 touches in the season opener. In your opinion, how long does it take for a running back to be fully up to speed and fully back in game shape?
Yeah, you know, and it's different. It differs with different players. You know, for me, I needed the preseason to get into game shape, and I loved getting those reps. But we saw Bell come in last year. He missed three games last year, came in, and his first game he had 144 yards rushing. So we know he's capable, but he certainly did look a little bit out of sorts this first game against the Browns. He just didn't look like he was himself, and it's going to take him some time. You know, that practice, that game action, the game conditioning, that takes time to get that up to speed. So, you know, it may be a week or two for him. We'll see him back to his old self, but I don't think it's going to be too much longer than that.
And then what about Ezekiel Elliott? He rushed for over 100 yards. He had 36 yards through the air as well against the Giants. I mean, the Cowboys have got some pretty nice backs behind him, but how different is that offense with Elliott there versus when he's not there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you saw it. He's a difference maker. When he's in there, it not only affects the way the line blocks, but to me, it has the effect of everybody in that huddle. They just feel like they're more confident with that offense. You know, you know you got a stud back there. You know he's a one play away from breaking a long run. He's going to be a difference maker when it comes to short yardage runs. He's an attitude guy, and they feed off of that. And so when he's out there, you can tell that team is totally different. It's no knock on Alfred Morris or McFadden. It's just, you know, Zeke is a different player, and that offense functions a lot better when he's back there.
Aaron in Corvallis, good to have you on. Aaron, how are you?
Hey, Jim. You cracked me up, man. The Olympics, that's phenomenal. My folks were at the 84 Olympics. And anyway, I just wanted to touch on that interview you had with TD. I'm a Raider fan, and I did not like TD because he was good. And he pushed it. And they won it, and they crushed us. But that is what it is. I've been listening to you since 1991. I'm originally a SACTO guy, NorCal, but I fully represent Southern California because I spent a lot of time in Manhattan Beach at the Kettle, and it's pretty good, pretty good. But I want to represent the Beaver Country and the Pac-12, how strong it is. It's very strong. And, you know, I'm excited about my Raiders. And I just, I'm an A's fan, but the dang Dodgers, I was so happy to see them win one because that's a tough road there. And, Cleveland is killing it too, man. It's good to see sports variety, you know, and I appreciate you giving me the vine.
Oh, bro, you earned that vine. You're killing it. I mean, you're rolling. Let me ask you something, Aaron. Like, what have you done today? Are you at work? Are you at home? What's going on?
I'm at work. Actually, Jim, today is my 50th birthday, and it's a good day.
No, it's a great
day. That's all I got to say.
Good man. Happy birthday, Aaron. Happy birthday. Thank you for listening. You covered a lot of ground. That was real. He said that he's been listening to me since 1991. And Aaron in Oregon is getting a lot of reaction. Steven ABQ is in first. No shark. Let him go. I did. I think he was done. Believe me, if it were up to me, Aaron would still be going right now.
I've been listening to you since 1991. I spent a lot of time in Manhattan Beach.
Beaks in Studio City tweets, is he hamskied or what?
But I want to represent the Beaver Country.
At Steven PHX tweets, is this guy crying?
I'm excited about my Raiders.
At Razor's Edge, is this guy being tickled while he's calling?
I'm an A's fan.
Wow. Right. We'll go back. Ryan Blaney is my guest. All right, so bring me up to date. You're coming off a race at Richmond, which probably is not your favorite track. So do you try to do any homework or debrief on Richmond, or with the playoffs starting on Sunday, do you just move right on to thinking about what's coming up?
Yeah, Richmond really hasn't been my best track. I think I've had one good run there in the past 5 years. And just some of this is pretty tough for me to figure out. But we really didn't think on Richmond too much. You know, after that race was over, we really just started looking forward to Chicago and then the races after that. But mainly Chicago, just because you want to get started off on the right foot. And we're just excited to be in the playoffs, number one. It's my first time being in the playoffs, and it's the Wood Brothers' first time also. So everybody's really excited and very privileged to be in the spot that we're in and ready to go on Sunday. It should be a fun 10 weeks, that's for sure.
You know, I was going to ask you, it is your first time. It's the first time for Wood Brothers, and I was going to ask you how you're feeling about that, but you just said so. You're excited. Now, from the outside, it seems like there's been a lot of talk about you and the team being underdogs in the playoffs. What is your reaction when you hear that? Does it feel right, or does it put a bit of a chip on your shoulder?
Yeah, I mean, I hear that a lot of, you know, our team's the underdogs, and that doesn't really bother me too much, and I can see how people would think that. And you know, we haven't gone out and dominated races by any means, like a few teams have been able to do this year. But I think our team is working really well together, and I feel like we can be one of the best ones if we put all the right pieces together. And but that just kind of doesn't really bother me being under that title. It almost motivates our team a little bit more, and wants to prove everybody wrong that. Because we deserve to be here. We deserve to be in the playoffs. They do a great job of getting to where we need to be, and their prep work is second to none. So I don't mind that title. It almost just drives everybody a little bit harder.
Ryan Blaney joining us. All right, so what about approach? You're going to be starting ninth in the playoff grid. So how do you go about approaching the playoffs? For instance, do you change up your strategy knowing the three-round elimination-style format, or do you just keep doing the things that got you to where you are right now?
You know, I feel like if you go in and then you try to change up either how you drive or the team changes up how they, you know, kind of call a race, that's pretty tough to do at last minute. So there are some things I think we'll change, you know, just being in the playoffs and knowing this three races before elimination. But really, we do what we have done all year, which is just go try to win races, try to win stages, and you know, all that other stuff will play itself out. But the intensity level is going to rise by a huge margin, I think, for all 10 weeks. You know, it really doesn't start halfway through. It starts at Chicago, and that intensity level kind of stays way up there. So that is something that will change a bunch. But as far as how we approach the race weekends, I don't think we're really going to do much different. It's just, at the end of the day, it's just racing. It's what we've been doing all year, and you can't psych yourself out that it's anything more than that.
Ryan Blaney joining us. Now, NASCAR stepped their game up, especially their social game. They unveiled customized emojis and hashtags for the drivers in the playoffs. And I've got to say, yours is one of the cooler ones, with your head, the hat, the shades, rocking the flowing mane. What was the thought that went into that, and what do you make of how it came out?
Yeah, thanks. That was really neat. That's something NASCAR has done this year, doing the hashtags with all the drivers in the playoffs. And they are actually talking to the drivers and teams a lot about what their, I guess you call it, emojis would be. And I actually got that one from I saw a t-shirt, and it was actually a Tim Richmond t-shirt, and that was the base of it, and I kind of took it and made it my own. So that was really cool in NASCAR to get our suggestions, and that's something really neat for the fans to play with throughout these 10 weeks and throughout the playoffs.
I like it. Now, you're in the film Logan Lucky, which stars Channing Tatum, Adam Driver, Daniel Craig, among others. What a great experience. What was that like to shoot that film?
Yeah, the Logan Lucky film was awesome. I really enjoyed doing that. I thought it was a great movie. We were able to see it in theaters about a month ago, and I thought it turned out great. And when I think of Daniel Craig, you don't really think of a bank robber or someone who's from West Virginia. You know, he's 007 to me.
Right.
And that was pretty funny to see. But to be part of that whole process was really neat, even though I have a super small role in it. Just to kind of see how all that stuff works was pretty funny. And I was able to do that, and I was able to be a little part in the Cars 3 movie. So that's been a lot of fun to kind of branch out and do. And that's, you know, probably the NASCAR getting drivers out there and letting us be ourselves a little bit. And I think that is really neat, and it's just really nice to be a part of and as allowed to do those things.
Now, you know, I mentioned this at the top, and the last time you were on, we talked about this, but you are the host of the Glass Case of Emotion podcast. You had some signage on the wall at Richmond, and then it was hit during the race. Who hit it, and then what'd you make of that situation?
Yeah. The podcast has been a lot of fun, man. It's been super cool to do. We've been doing it since right after the Daytona 500, since March, and that's been really cool. We've had a bunch of awesome drivers on, and that podcast is really just to show drivers' personalities and get them away from the racetrack, get them away from their standard interviews, and just have them just talk for half hour, 45 minutes and about their personal lives. And that's what relates us to the fans. But, yeah, we had it on the wall at Richmond, which was awesome. And Landon Castle actually ended up hitting it and didn't destroy it, but he messed it up a good bit. And I give him a hard time for that. But that was really nice. We've had a lot of that stuff on the racetracks. I don't know why the racetracks want to put our logo up, whether it's on the wall or in the infield. That's been pretty neat. But I appreciate you mentioning that, man. That's something I have a lot of fun doing.
It is never too early to start thinking about the Olympics, especially since it is now official. The 2024 Olympics, Summer Olympics, have been awarded to Paris. Oh, but wait. The 2028 Summer Olympics have been awarded to Los Angeles. What an unbelievable win for LA. An unbelievable victory for Los Angeles, who beat out, well, absolutely nobody. They beat nobody. After cities like Hamburg, Rome, and Budapest withdrew from the competition for 2024, leaving only Paris and LA, the IOC decided to give 2024 to Paris and 2028 to Los Angeles. Bitchin'! Olympics, catch the fever. And that news was immediately greeted by an online petition from No Olympics LA, a coalition of groups opposed to hosting the games. They called for a citywide vote on whether to accept the Olympics in 2028. So, check out my town. Check out my hometown. In a very brief time, Los Angeles has gone from a city with zero football teams to one with two football teams. And an Olympics. Since when did Los Angeles become the place where every team or sporting event wanted to show up? And usually it's a team or a sporting event that people in some other city do not want. Have you noticed that? Hey, look, I don't want to be the guy, the big buzzkill, the guy to rain on this parade. I'm sure there are some people somewhere who are pumped up about this. I mean, as an example, if you're an American athlete and you have Olympic dreams, what would be better than competing on your home soil? It'd be amazing to have the crowd behind you in the stadium as you get into the starting blocks for the 100 meters. I mean, that's the moment of a lifetime. But, I'm not an athlete. What I am is somebody who didn't just live through the 84 Olympics, but was a key cog in the 84 Olympics. I'm not sure those games get done without me. Look, I'm here to tell you, as somebody who was there back then, we're good. We're good. We don't need this. Thanks, but no thanks. How did the Olympics work out for Rio? Or Sochi? So-so. Or worse. I'm going to say nothing of the fact that they've got the potential to be very, very expensive. And yes, I know that this bid has been all about private funding, and that we've been assured that there's no way there could be cost overruns. Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. How many times have we heard that before from a host city? Y'all believe that when I actually see that. Just like I'll believe that the IOC is not corrupt when I see that too. Hey, listen, don't get it twisted. I'm not here to hate. I don't hate the Olympics. I don't. In fact, I really like the Olympics. They're great. As always, I'm team content. I'm for anything that gives me anything to talk about. And the Olympics are something that is good to talk about. Some of my favorite athletes of all time are or were Olympians. So don't get it twisted. The Olympics are great. They're exciting. They're dramatic. And they make for great television, which is pretty much my point. They're great on television. That's where I would like to keep them. Because actually having them in your backyard is pretty inconvenient. And if you're in SoCal, not Los Angeles, but Southern California, do not think that you're going to avoid this, because it's going to cover a hell of a lot more ground than just the 323 or the 310. It's all of SoCal. As an example, Anaheim is expected to host volleyball. Head to Long Beach for the BMX action. San Dimas! Mountain biking could be headed your way. Reaction! I want to hear from somebody in Riverside County. You're no longer only about meth. Now there's rowing, sculling, quadruple sculling, the coxless fours. Get ready. Sepulveda Basin Sports Complex. Are you ready to host the equestrian events? Hey, look, I hope you are, and I hope you're excited. Just know this, I'm not. In fact, I'm already planning my escape. The Olympics come to my town, I go to yours. I mean, where to go? It's not like I can even go to the 909. They're there too. They'll probably work their way all the way up to the 805. Now, Canada, I'm coming to you. 2028, Canada, I'll be there. I want to hear from somebody who has never attended an Olympics. Tell me I'm wrong. Because I'll tell you, I have. I worked them. I was a key component of them. I don't need them in my backyard. I really don't. 2028. DJ Durkin is my guest. Now, last year you took over a team that had won 3 games. You doubled that total. You led the program to a bowl game. You're now in your second season with this group. So how different is the feel of September 2017 versus September 2016 now that you've got that year under your belt with this group?
Right, yeah. You know what? It's kind of a world difference. And just, you know, in the small things, which lead to big things, our team has a much better understanding of what we're looking for on a day-to-day basis, and there's a comfort level, I think, on both sides. You know, as a coach, you feel good when you know your players, you know how they respond to things, you know how to push their buttons, and I think as a player, it's the same. I mean, our guys know myself, our coaching staff much better, and what we're all about, and what our expectations are, and so a lot of things move a lot smoother, operate faster, and we can really focus on, you know, getting better at football and the things we need to improve upon, as opposed to, you know, the details of just how we operate.
Now, I know you know more about them because one of the things that you said in the spring was, quote, I'm even more convinced now than when I evaluated it, we can and will win championships here, end of quote. So what did you see in that first season that made you even more convinced than ever that you could win championships there?
Well, I mean, I guess two big reasons. One is when you look at the guys we have on our team and the veteran leadership on our team, they're very coachable. And so, you know, getting guys to do what you want them to do and developing and improving your roster obviously is, you know, done a lot easier and quicker when you have guys that are ready and willing and ready, you know, able to take coaching and make corrections and changes. And then the other thing is in this area and where we're at, there's great talent to recruit, and so, you know, we signed a great recruiting class last year. We're working on another one, and I think year in and year out, there's enough talent here in this area that can feed into this program, and from a talent-wise level, I think we can compete with anyone. So it's our job to obviously keep those guys at home and keep recruiting really hard, which we know we got to do, but I really feel like, you know, this is a place where you can do it every year.
DJ Durkin joining us, Maryland head football coach. In fact, I was going to ask you about that, so I'll go there right now. DMV, for instance, an area where you have recruited extremely well since you arrived in College Park. From a recruiting standpoint, you always want to do everything, obviously, to keep your local talent at home. So what's your message to players about the opportunities that they have at home and at Maryland?
Right. I think like when you evaluate things, like, and I guess it probably applies to a lot of things, big decisions in life, you sit there and go through the criteria and start checking off the boxes. And, you know, if you can get as good, better, or, you know, an opportunity, you know, geographically near where you live and where you're from, oftentimes that's what you're going to do. If you can't, then that's usually a reason to expand and go somewhere else. And so for us, it's just eliminating all the reasons to leave. I mean, you can receive a top education. We're a top 15 public school in the country. You can play at the very highest level. I think the Big Ten East is you know, arguably one of the top divisions and top conferences in the country. You know, we have a new facility that's being built. It's halfway done right now, and it's going to be as nice as anywhere in the country. you know, and you go with our Under Armour connection. I mean, that makes, you know, that relationship unique to anywhere else. And so when you start checking all the boxes and going through it, you say, okay, then why would you leave? There's not a reason. You're not going to go get something better. The biggest thing we had to fill in and we need to keep going with is, okay, is there a tangible success on the field that someone could see, recognize, and say things are heading in the right direction? And so thus far, that's where we have it going. And we know we have a ton more work to do and got to keep that going. But I think you just eliminate the reasons that someone would want to leave.
DJ Durkin joining us. Plus, a nice win last week. I mean, you open up the season by going on the road to number 23 Texas. You beat them by double digits in their house. Now, it's one thing to open up on the road against a team like Texas, but it's another to do it and then lose your starting quarterback, which meant the true freshman, Kasim Hill, had to come in. It can be an incredibly daunting situation. What do you make of the way he handled himself?
Yeah, it's just amazing. I mean, it really was. He was more calm and ready, I think, than we were as coaches. So, I mean, you know, went over to him and said, you know, you kind of looked at him. You could tell by look in his eye, and he was smiling. And a couple of his teammates in the huddle were like, hey, man, you ready? You okay? And he looked and said, come on, let's go play ball. Hmm. And I mean, he went in and did it. He was, you know, 3 for 3 and rushed for a touchdown. And in a big moment, too. I mean, when he came in the game, they had cut the lead to 3. It was the fourth quarter. I think his first throw was a 3rd and 19. He completed down the sideline for 40 yards, and so that tells you a lot about him. And that's, we really felt like that's who we have in him. And you know, it was a tough decision coming into the season of who the starter was going to be, just because of that. We thought we had a great one there with us, and it was good to see him actually go out there in a game and you know, perform and do what we thought he would do.
Now, shortly after you arrived in Maryland, you implemented the Champions Club, and this is where you reward players for meeting and setting the standards for the program. What exactly is the club about, and then what kind of an impact has it had on the players?
It's really just to create an environment that is, you know, you're rewarding achievement. You're rewarding guys that are doing things to the standard of what the program is. So when you're in a new program and you're building a culture, I think it's really clear to spell out, these are the expectations, this is what we're asking of you. And then you create a room where, so okay, we're not all treated equally. It's the guys that are doing what we're asking are treated a certain way. And then you have a group of guys that aren't in that yet, and then they got to make a decision. They got to say, you know what, this is worth me putting the extra work in. This is worth me, you know, taking coaching and doing the things they're asking, because I want to be part of that group. I see how they're getting treated. I want to do it. And it makes it really hard to survive and stay in the program, you know, if you're not doing that, because it's, you know, when you look at it, you say everyone likes to be rewarded. Everyone likes to be pointed out for positive things. So eventually the thought is guys are going to come around and they're going to do it that way, or maybe not. And maybe then it's time for them to move on. And at the end of the day, you get a roster full of guys that are really operating at a high level.
We go to Sacramento. Dan in Sactown. Dan, good morning. What's up? How are you?
Good, bro. How are you?
I'm great. All good here.
Good, man. Hey, so I got a quick question for you. I'm dating this girl about 2 years, and I have a company car for sales, right? So they gave me a car, and I have another car that I don't drive anymore, but it's a nice car. She's got a really POS car. Window won't go down, no air conditioning. It's been like 95 to 100 in Sacramento. Always complaining. So I'm like, hey, why don't you just use my Audi while, you know, before the weather gets cooler again? She's been driving it. She's getting real comfortable with it. And, you know, I have my company car. I'm not sure how I approach trying to get my car back, because I want to sell it, but, you know.
Dude, I got bad news for you. You're not getting that car back. It's gone. It's gone. And can I tell you something else? It's going to get worse, because soon she's going to decide she's got no need for you either. And then the car is gone and she's gone. Bad news. Why would you let her use that car? Why would you let her use that car? Does she have a key to your place? Because then she's going to take that too. And bro, you're going to be so distraught that you lost your lady and your car that it's going to impact the way you go about your work. And then you're going to lose your job and the company car that comes with your job. And then you'll be a bum in the streets. Bum smack. It's back. Aaron, wake up. You're next. Aaron, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Jimmy?
What's up?
Oh, not much, man. First of all, congratulations to the city of Los Angeles. Man, that's got to be big, getting the 2028 Olympics. I hope there's flying cars by then, because could you imagine the traffic in L.A.? Also, I hope they get the shipment of cocaine in time for the Russian horse.
That's not a good car. No.
You don't like that car.
I don't like that car. Not a very good car.
And that's not a very good call, Aaron. It's just not a very good call. You know, if you want to come in here and crack us for our traffic, that's fine. It's all true. As always, I've grown up in Los Angeles. You cannot believe how bad the traffic is now compared to what it was even 5 years ago. And then 5 years before that. I can only imagine what the traffic will be like here 5 years from now. Then 10 years from now. Right around the time the Olympics rolls around. You know, I'm worried about a lot of things, Aaron. With the Olympics, which is why I said that I do not want them in my backyard. I love the Olympics. I just don't want to host the Olympics. And I have lots of concerns. The inconvenience. The traffic. The cost overruns. I'm worried about those things. But I can tell you the one thing I'm not worried about. How and when they're going to ship all the cocaine in for the Russian prostitutes. I'm not worried about that, Aaron. I'm really not. And nor should you. Maybe it'll be like when they do all those drop shipments from helicopters of all the condoms in the Olympic villages everywhere. Aaron, you know what? Don't you worry about us. We'll be just fine. Or actually, we won't, which is the point of the take. But I'm not worried about whether or not the cocaine will be here for, quote, the Russian hoes. Come on, Aaron. Clones, thank you very much for listening to The Daily Jungle. Thank you for downloading episode 3 of the Jim Rohn podcast. The reaction has been amazing. I am humbled and appreciative. Thank you very much. If you haven't heard it, go ahead and check it out. See you on Friday. And remember, TGIF, the grind includes Friday.